Senator, and he's also my senator, too. Senator Ron Latz, thank you very much for the time.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
My pleasure here. Your thoughts on the session here as it finished up?
Well, it was very frustrating. We had a lot of stuff that could have been done, that there was broad consensus on, but unfortunately, the majorities in the House and the Senate insisted on sending the governor a supplemental budget bill that had a lot of poison pills in it. Governor said he's going to veto that bill. They dared him to do it. They sent it to him, and he did what he said he was going to do. So they shouldn't be surprised. The problem, of course, is there was a lot of good policy that we all agreed on that died along with the clunkers. So that was frustrating. The tax bill, they had a similar deal. They weren't willing to negotiate with the governor on it. They probably could have found some common ground there to deal with the federal tax conformity that was required. They didn't, and so the governor did what he said he was going to do there, too. He vetoed the tax bill. The bonding bill, still undecided. I guess the governor is going to announce tomorrow morning what he's going to do with that. Mm-hmm. The thing is, there's a lot of stuff that we did do that didn't make the headlines necessarily. I mean, we passed a pension bill after several years of work that's going to stabilize a number of pensions across the state for public employees, from teachers to state government employees and so on. And we passed some other good things also. But unfortunately, there's a lot of other stuff that was kind of dumped into the budget bill, the omnibus bill.
I think the best way to describe how the Republicans think about doing things is similar to when a movie company has an R-rated film they want to get as a PG-13. What they do is they put out the raunchiest R version they can. They send that to the review board. When the review board says, oh, there's no way in the world we're putting this out as a PG-13, they come back and they start editing it down slightly until they get there. And that's how sometimes you get movies which are PG-13, which really should be R-rated films. That is how it seems that's what the Republicans do. Their starting point is the most extreme, far R-rated bill they possibly can get. And then they say, oh, well, then we'll come one or two steps back to you. But that's our version of compromise. Governor Dayton very clearly said there's 117 things in this monstrosity bill that had to come on out of it. They refused to take them out and acted as like taking 70 of the bad things, leaving 47 in there, was somehow compromise. That wasn't compromise because there was no compromising on those things. That was just stuff that the Republicans put in there. Is that a fair assessment on how the Republicans do things?
Well, that is a fair assessment of what they did this year. And they've got a track record of doing the same, although in the past they seem to have had some more actual conversations with the governor. This time it appears their method of negotiation was to simply decide what they're going to take out and toss the next offer back to the governor in the form of a new bill, we don't have time to go back and forth with 10 different versions of the budget bill. What they should have been doing is sitting down with the governor and showing a willingness to say, you know, we can't accept this, but we can't accept that. And in the end, if we can't all agree on some stuff, maybe we need to just pass what we agree on. Mm-hmm. The supplemental budget bill itself, we had a lot of fundamental problems. They cut agency budgets. We're in a year where we have a surplus, and they're cutting agency budgets. They're adding agency mandates without funding them. They had opioid budget a crisis provisions in there, but they took it out of the general fund without putting any financial responsibility in the industry that contributed to causing the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. They had elder care provisions in there that were written by the industry, didn't have any consumer protections in it for the residents. They had the tip credit for minimum wage in there, a highly contentious provision that the governor's rejected for years. They were going to circumvent the Public Utilities Commission regarding utility rate payers and regarding the Enbridge Line 3. They had protest language that was way overbroad addressing the critical infrastructure. They prohibited MNLAR's funding from the DPS, so the department wouldn't even be able to use their general budget to try to straighten out the computer problems. They had a star rating system for public schools, which was also highly controversial. They had academic balance language that was very controversial, and they abolished the IT department for the state of Minnesota. So there's just a lot of stuff that was in there. The governor said a long time ago he wasn't going to accept it. So unfortunately, you know, the governor gets the last word. That's not unfortunate. That's a good thing.
Well, it is.
But unfortunately, the Republicans decided just to send it to him, adjourn, and go home, and then dare him to veto it, basically. And that's what he did. He did what he said he was going to do, to his credit.
And thank God for Governor Dayton, or else we'd have Wisconsin right now. And I've seen plenty of studies showing how much better Minnesota is thanks to Governor Dayton. You brought up the interesting thing about elder care, the hands-free cell phone bill, the opiates. There have been some reports that the lobbyists descended upon the Republican caucus in the House and the Senate. I don't know how much you can share about that information, but was it that bad? You know, there were reports that basically when these bills were coming up, the gun industry as well, that basically the lobbyists descended upon the Republicans and got them all in line and henceforth killed bills, which were somewhat wildly popular, even bills that Republicans themselves up until a certain point were championing, but they basically decided to let fall by the wayside.
Well, I think that especially happened with the opioid provisions. The pharmaceutical industry flooded the Capitol with lobbyists, and they met individually with legislators. They didn't even testify at the hearings, from what I understand. The gun bills, it's a little different animal. There's basically one big lobbyist there at the NRA, and they've got, you know, some local groups that, you know, that all Minnesota-based groups also that are involved in that. And I don't think that was mostly lobbyists. I think that was they activated their grassroots. And they made legislators fear that they were going to lose support. And those, the gun bills, you know, three of them were mine. I mean, I carried the criminal background check bill to close loopholes. I carried the bill for the extreme risk protection orders to get the guns out of the hands of people that are in crisis. I carried the bill to increase the age to 21 for the purchase of firearms. You know, they just wouldn't even give them a hearing. And 90% of the public supports those bills. Same with the hands-free cell phone, broad public support for that. Would have saved a whole lot of lives if they'd passed that. I don't think that was so much a lobbyist issue, although maybe it was that, we didn't see. We don't see everything above the radar that's going on over there. But we should have passed that, too. Elder care was a lobbyist issue. The nursing home industry did focus very heavily on the legislature, and basically the provisions that were in the budget bill for the governor to consider were written by the industry.
I want to, on behalf of myself, the station, and a lot of people out there, I want to actually thank you for your championing of common sense gun regulation in a day and age where we have daily slaughters in the United States of America. The fact that we are actually still have a case where 90% of us want this, and a handful of Republicans who are basically jamming as much NRA money in their pockets as they possibly can are holding this stuff up. Here you are fighting the good fight and just saying this is just common sense stuff, stuff that's legal to do, stuff that's not an overreach, stuff that will make us safer. And it was. I'm glad you fought. It was painful to watch it get negated so quickly and so easily by the Republicans, but thank God you're there at least fighting the good fight, my friend.
Well, thank you, Matt. You know, we ran into the same kind of roadblock. I carried the net neutrality provisions, and I carried internet privacy again this year. And we couldn't even get a hearing. Couldn't even get a vote on the merits on those bills. The Republicans blocked us at every turn. But, you know, eventually the public will prevail. On these issues. It's going to take some more time, apparently.
Of course, the bonding bill you mentioned out there, there is some quirks out there. I was reading about one of the quirks. The Republican leadership attempts to use lottery money to pay bond obligations on wastewater treatment facilities and landfill reclamation. There are people that are kind of saying, no, that's not what that money is supposed to be for. You'd mentioned Republicans got really creative with shifting money around to basically, cover things they wanted to cover while, you know, defunding things they didn't like. Do you think that bill is going to get vetoed overall, or do you think there'll be just a lot of line item vetoes in it?
You know, if I were going to predict, I would think the governor is going to sign the bonding bill. Mm-hmm. There may be some line item vetoes in there. There is some inappropriate items there. I voted against the bonding bill for a number of reasons. It did not have any transit funding in there. It had over $500 million in trunk highway funds and other highway funds for roads and bridges, but not a penny for buses or other transit. It was a relatively low budget or bonding bill, only $825 million, which some would say is a lot, but we have the fiscal capacity in the state to go about twice that much, and we certainly have the need to maintain our infrastructure at a much higher level. One of the biggest needs was the higher education systems, the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State system that have a lot of deferred maintenance from existing buildings. We should have doubled the amount of the money going toward shoring up our existing buildings. We were missing our local projects in my area also, nothing. So I didn't even have those to be able to bring in to support that bill. And there was a really wasteful funding mechanism in there. It would have cost $98 million to do one particular category of spending. But the way they shifted the kinds of bonds they were going to use, it'll cost an extra $46 million to pay them back. Just a lousy way to do it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of problems with the bonding bill. A lot of good projects in there, too, to be sure. And some questions about, some of the mechanisms that were being used to pay for them. But because I think there are a lot of good projects in there, I think ultimately the governor is going to go ahead and sign it.
It's the one quick way we can solve this mess, because even, Majority Leader Gazelka kind of avoided answering about his relationship with Kurt Dowd. One thing I think that could clean up this up a lot. I know you're not up for re-election until 2020, but of course the Minnesota House is up. We've got a real opportunity, I think, this time with the blue wave and people getting excited, people being active. We need that Minnesota House back in the hands of the Democrats, and it is very attainable to get that this year, especially just with the metro area seats. We can, as you talked about, with stuff like transit. Clearly the Republicans don't care about the metro area, so these are seats that the Democrats should be able to pick up.
Well, absolutely. There are a number of legislative seats in the metro area, the suburban seats especially, where there are some Republicans that are much more extreme in their voting record than their districts, if their districts only knew, including Representative Loon in Eden Prairie, Representative Anderson in Plymouth, both of whom, fought the gun legislation. They introduced their own fig leaves to try to claim that they were trying to do something about it, but couldn't even get a hearing on those. I think if we make some issues like gun violence critical enough in those elections and hold them accountable for their inaction, then we're going to drive people to the polls on those issues, and we can retake those seats. If we have any kind of a wind at our back for Democrats nationally, that's going to help us a lot. The governor's race is going to drive a lot of turnout, too. Mm-hmm. In the 3rd District, we've got, what will be a hard-fought race to unseat Representative Paulson. I think we're going to be able to win that race, too, and it's going to drive a lot of attention. So I really think we've got a good chance metro-wide to take back enough seats to recapture the House and to hang on to the governor's race. But let me tell you, it's going to be a lot of work. There's a lot of money coming into the state from around the country on these races, and we're going to need a lot of people to pay attention and get out and work hard to make it happen.
Ron Latz is senator from District 46. He's my senator. He's a fantastic senator, and he's been just an absolute champion for Minnesotans, caring about all the constituents in the states, not just his own Senate district. And by God, I want to thank you for your brave stances on gun control, because without you, that would have never even – I don't think there would have been any conversation at all about it. At least you force these people to have to vote it down and say that we're not going to talk about that. At least there is someone up there with common sense when it came to that issue, and I'm very grateful that you were there, sir.
Thank you, Matt.
My pleasure. Senator Ron Latz is Democrat of the day.